This is a Media Lab podcast. Welcome to Putting It Together, the podcast that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show and song by song. My name is Kyle Marshall, your self-described Sondheim expert. Ooh, can you believe that it's September already? You know, back here a few months ago, there was this kind of weird, time schism that happened where it felt like the last 2 weeks of April lasted an entire year, and then May came and it seemed to last 2 days. And I feel like that has been kind of fluctuating over the last few weeks for me, where some days feel like I snap my fingers and it's just like, oh, okay, it's actually been 3 weeks already. And then some days go by and it's like, boof, the last 3 hours have felt like the last 3 years. Maybe some of that's political, maybe some of that's my own doing, but who can tell for sure? The only thing I know for sure is that I'm here to talk to you about Follies and about Stephen Sondheim, which I hope is going to be a little bit more positivity into your life, even though, spoiler alert, but I think this happy little song that we're going to be listening here today is a lot more negative than what you might think on first listen. Matthew Sampson is my guest today. He has been here before, based on a great suggestion that was emailed to me. With returning guests, we normally just jump right into the show. So if you want to hear Matthew's other episodes, he's been on for Another 100 People in the Company season, as well as Everybody Ought to Have a Maid from A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. So if you want to go and take a listen to some of his other episodes, those are the ones to check out first. Of course, one of my other major things is that as much as I love my sponsors that help me make this show, I would love if we could turn this into an entirely fan-supported podcast. And so I have to thank my Patreon supporters that help me out each and every week. Of course, I love every one of you, but thank you to the God That's Good tier, the Holy Triumvirate, as I like to call them, Jack, Todd, and Barry, for helping me out there. Oh, one last thing I should just point out too is that please continue sending me emails to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. I'm going to be very upfront with you based on some not great mental health here over like the last 3 weeks, as well as just being snowed under with other jobs. I am taking so much longer to respond to emails than it should or that it normally takes me. So if it takes like a week, and I hate to say it, maybe even two for me to respond back to you, it's not because I'm ignoring you. It's literally because I can't. There's some days where it's like, I cannot engage. I need to work on myself. That's an apology. And so I'm trying to get better and get into a situation where I can just respond back as soon as you send them to me. But now it's time for plodding along. So Loveland was the start of the supposed collective mental breakdown. Our first number is of the young couples singing about the future. The only question is whether this is truly an optimistic tune or something much more negative. Okay, I'm going to go thank some sponsors, and then when I return, it'll be my conversation with Matthew Sampson about the dual songs You're Gonna Love Tomorrow and Love Will See Us Through. Putting It Together is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. This episode of Putting It Together is brought to you by the Calgary Foundation. Whether it's funding anti-racism programs, addiction recovery, or food hampers for the hungry, for 65 years, the Calgary Foundation has proudly supported the charitable community to address some of Calgary's biggest challenges. Now, during this period of unprecedented urgent needs, Calgary Foundation renewed its commitment to building a healthy, vibrant, giving, caring, and resilient community. If you're a registered charity looking for a grant, a professional advisor creating a giving plan for your client, or a donor wanting to give back to the community, Discover a wealth of resources at calgaryfoundation.org and learn more about their work through Calgary Foundation's Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. This week, Putting It Together is also brought to you by ATB. And I wanted to talk to you about a new initiative from our friends at ATB called ATB Goodness Grows. Hashtag ATB Goodness Grows is an initiative that motivates Albertans to bring joyful moments to others. We're all adjusting to being disconnected from the places, people, and experiences we love. So making someone laugh or bringing a smile to their day has never been more needed or more powerful. From live streams connecting business owners to new and fun ways to celebrate things like Father's Day, ATB hopes to inspire Albertans to keep the goodness growing. To find out more or to get involved, visit atb.com/COVID-19/community.
What will tomorrow bring? The pundits query.
Will it be cheery?
Will it be sad?
Will it be birds in spring or harakiri?
Don't worry.
Matthew, thank you so much for returning.
Thanks for having me back. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, as good as people can be, I think, at this time. Of course, this is going to be months of from now when we're recording this. So who knows what the future will bring to the world. I want to know right from the very beginning what your history with Follies is.
So Follies, I found this one in college. It was just like another Sondheim that I was collecting as I was getting into his work. High school, I'd known like Sweeney and West Side Story and Company, Into the Woods. So a couple of the more popular main ones. And then college was when I started raiding the school library and finding all these CDs. And so like for Sondheim and for like a lot of musicals that I like, I'm just because I didn't grow up near New York or see a lot of off-Broadway touring, anything like that. I just grew up on albums. And so I've done the Follies album for at least since like 2009-10 it would have been back then. But
and that was the original Broadway cast?
Yeah, that was the original Broadway cast. And actually, it's kind of funny because like this one, the I'm sure you've already talked about it, is like so truncated and
yeah,
shrunken
very
down.
Cut up.
Yeah, it's really cut up. And so the original Sweeney Todd that I had, we bought, that album was actually, I didn't realize it at the time, but highlights from Sweeney Todd. And so
yeah,
that
sure.
album itself cut out like Greenfinch and Linnet Bird, the original Kiss Me, Pirelli's Miracle Elixir. And so it was just like a one disc thing rather than a two disc thing. So Sweeney and Follies, like it wasn't until a couple years later, I was like, oh, there's actually more show to this than I realized.
That's always kind of fun though, too. It's like, oh, I'm discovering this new music, even though it's like been around the entire time.
Yeah, like I didn't realize God That's Good is a reprise. I thought that was a new melody right there, but I was like,
right,
just Pirelli's Miracle Elixir again.
I guess, like, what was it about this show? Like, was it something that you would have rated, like, high in your Sondheim list, middle of the road, lower? Like, where? How would you have rated it?
I mean, it's Sondheim, so it's great, but, like, I can't say it's ever been number one for me. I was talking with a friend earlier this week about it, and, like, I think just because Follies is such a show about older people problems that it's just harder for, you know, when I'm young and in high school, college and learning this stuff to like try to connect with it. So stuff like Sunday in the Park and Into the Woods, those are shows more about young people that you can kind of latch onto those ideas in an easier way. Or at least for me, that was the case. But then shows where you've got to be a little bit older, like Follies, it's kind of more difficult to understand where these characters are coming from, you know, like The Road You Didn't Take or something like that. I still feel like the young version. I'm 30 now, but like, I still kind of feel like the young versions with like, you know, all these different possibilities in front of me. So I don't really know in a visceral way what it feels like for them to like have taken those roads and there's no going back and like their entire future is like already been done.
Someone else who I've already talked to, and now I can't remember which song it was. So it could have already happened or it's about to happen. Kind of comparing this with Company in a way, where Company is a little bit is all about people and relationships in their 30s. And this is very much people and relationships in their late 40s. So it's like another decade removed from people's experience and stuff like that. And very dark. Like it doesn't end on a happy note at all. So it's kind of this like depressing little show about relationships.
It is. And like on that timeline too, I was doing the math earlier and the show set in like 71 and the Follies in the show shut down in 1940. So that's like a 30 some year difference. But between 71 and now, it's like a 50 year difference. So it's just kind of weird to see how time shrinks like that. Like they're singing about this like thing between the wars, which seems infinitely long ago, but to them in the 70s, which doesn't seem too long ago to me, even though I wasn't alive for it. Like it's weird kind of wrapping your head around.
Yeah, time is so bizarre because how I always, like this is the one that kind of melts my brain a little bit. So when I was born, Well, I was born in the 80s, but I was definitely like a more a 90s kid. That's where I kind of came of age. And I remember, like, even though I really liked the Beatles, right? That was like, that's old music. That was 30 years ago that this stuff was made. But like the 90s was 30 years ago. So people listening to that would be like me listening to Beatles music. And it's like, that's so bizarre for me right. to try and wrap my mind around.
I think, do you have any siblings or anything like that?
I do, yeah.
So I'm the youngest by my oldest brother is 8 years older than me. And my, mm-hmm. my parents are, I guess, like 30 some odd years older. So like a lot of my cultural references come from the things that they really liked and just were there. It was in the house as a kid. So like I know the Monkees and stuff like that right. really, really well. And I watched the Brady Bunch and Gilligan's Island all right. the time. And even those references, some of my friends my same age don't quite get the things that I'll reference. And then even like I'm a piano teacher, the younger kids that I talk about, they're like, what in the hell are you even talking about right now?
So. Yeah, it's hard. My parents were like into comedies from the 70s. So I saw like all the Mel Brooks stuff and all the Monty Python things probably when I was too young. But it was still I knew all the references and understood that. And then I grew up out on a farm. So I was like I had three channels and really only two because one was like basically a repeat of the other one. Like it's a weird thing, antenna right, on the roof, right. everything. So I wasn't until 16 or 17 before I got like a satellite so I could actually experience other things. So basically my upbringing was a lot of like reruns of stuff. So for whatever reason, like I saw so many reruns of like Laverne and Shirley and Happy Days and all this other stuff. And then when we got satellite, I got into really loving the oldie station. I don't know what they called it back then. It wasn't Nick at Night because Canada had its own version of that, but basically it was the same thing. So it's like I'm watching like All in the Family and MASH and like all this other stuff. So like that's all my like cultural upbringing is like that kind of content. But again, the people my age did not care about any of that stuff. So I have like all this stuff. It's like I should have been born in the 1950s just because that's kind of where my references kind of lie.
Right. I had a funny moment this week when a friend and I were on the phone and we were talking about that Bill Hader show, Barry. Mm-hmm. Henry Winkler's in that and he's yeah. basically playing the same character that he was in Arrested Development.
Just, sure. Yeah,
yeah. And I was talking to my friend about it. She's like, oh yeah, he's great. And I was like, yeah, can you believe he was the Fonz? And she's like, what? Like, she didn't realize that like this old man who in her mind has this one like archetype, this character that he plays all the time, he was also like the Fonz back in the day.
Yeah, the coolest guy in the world. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so anyway, tying this all back to Follies, like reading through Sondheim's book and trying to like dig into some of the pastiche, the things he was drawing on when he was writing this, like I feel kind of bad that I am not quite onto like the Cole Porter and Irving Berlin and the things like I should be for him, but I'm like kind of giving myself a pass because I'm like, well, this is Sondheim stuff, and I'm like 60 years younger than Sondheim, so
right.
maybe it's okay that I don't quite have the encyclopedia knowledge that he does.
Yeah, in a way, I wish I did have a little bit more knowledge of that sort of stuff. Like, I know of Cole Porter and Noel Coward and Irving Berlin. Like, I know their most popular stuff, but I just don't have a deep knowledge of their output. I think I would probably appreciate it even more if I did. The thing that keeps coming up this season, honestly, is what my own this is my own personal interpretation, so feel free to disagree with that. But I think that Follies, even more so than a lot of Sondheim stuff, you really need to see a version of it to really lock in like how all this fits together, because so much of it is disjointed and the plot basically leaves the show after about 40 minutes and it kind of goes off into this other thing, the psycho Follies, as Sondheim says. So I think if you're just approaching it, absolutely you can appreciate it for the music, but I don't think you would have a lick of understanding of what's going on in this show just by listening to the score.
All the pieces came together for me this week, because that's yeah. I don't know if we were recording for this, but like I grew up on albums. I already just talked about this. So like I've come up with my own like little fantasy version of the play that kind of matches the album in such right. a way. I went and I saw some bootlegs of it this week to kind of put all the pieces together, and it completely rocked my world. Like it Follies is now like the only thing on my mind right now is Sondheim, yeah. In a good way. So maybe it is my number one Sondheim now. But for instance, like Buddy, I always pictured him as the kind of schlub, the one who was being like cuckolded by Ben or whatever in my mind, according to this thing. And I didn't know quite what a Margie was or anything like that. And then I was like, okay, maybe Margie's like his pet name for Sally for some reason or something like that. And the God of I Don't You Love Me Blues never really made sense. I always loved that song, but it never quite gelled for me what was going on there. But I was like, oh wait, he's at fault too. And it's, yeah. Oh, okay. Like he's sleeping around. Like That was the thing that kind of hit me. That was so fun to watch in the show, is like how open they all are with like their infidelities, which I think is a really interesting scene to watch. You would think that like Carlotta would be a bigger character, but I think she has like a total of maybe 10 or 12 lines of dialogue in the book of the play, and then sings like a show stopping like 6 minute long number in the middle of it for seemingly no reason.
Well, I mean, yeah, and talk about, again, old references that nobody knows about. Like, I know, like, the original Carlotta is played by Yvonne DiCarlo, who I know from being in The Munsters. She was the mother in The Munsters.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like, that's my reference of her. So when I figured that out, I'm like, wait a second, what? How does this all fit together? So I'm sure people would have known that at the time and understood her, like, whole career and how that influences the character. But that's the thing about Follies, right? It's like all these different Follies numbers that come out throughout the show, which I think is, like, the brilliant piece of this, which is, like, if you're just watching this somewhat passively, you could be like, okay, this is just like a number to fill out the score and show like all these different Follies girls. But the subtext is that all of these Follies numbers are also actually commenting on the show. So there's like this double thing that's going on. Absolutely, you could pluck these and just perform them as a piece of music, but also they're very integral to the entire plot and you can't really remove them. So it's fascinating to me.
I don't want to like come out and say something definitively about it, but you know, we've been thinking about this in reference to Company. You guys just did this one.
Yeah.
And like being alive is like such an epiphany there at the end. And it's like so internal and such a soliloquy there. When I actually like finally saw this thing properly put on, I knew that there was something called a Loveland sequence. I didn't really put everything together and know what that was. But I saw a bootleg of the 2011 revival and the curtain comes down and then maybe 10 seconds later comes up and it's this big lush, lavish thing. And it like blew like my pants off. I was so excited. Like, this is insane. And it's just song after song after song. And it's so relentless. Like, you have the Loveland opener and the song we're going to do. And then that segues right into Buddy's Blues, into Losing My Mind.
Like, yeah.
I was joking, you know, no disrespect, but I'm just like, I can feel like the cocaine going through like Sondheim's body as he's writing all this, like, no, just sure. nonstop. I'm like, this is incredible. I just, oh man, makes me so excited.
Well, let's jump into the song we're here to talk about. There's technically two songs here, but even in the book, Finishing the Hat, that Sondheim wrote about his lyrics, these are as one. They're written as one song. So you're going to love Tomorrow / Love Will See Us Through. Follies is all about remembrances of the past and like the ghosts of our past selves. So this song is sung by all the younger versions of our four principal characters. And so I just want to give credit where credit is due. This is really the only song where all the young versions have a part. So young Ben in the original Broadway cast was Kurt Peterson. In the 1987 London version, it was played by Simon Green, or he was played by Simon Green. And in the 2017 National Theatre version, it was Adam Rees-Charles. And then, so those three versions for Young Phyllis were Virginia Sandifer, Gillian Bevan, and Zizi Stralin. Young Buddy has been played by Harvey Evans, Evan Pappas, and Fred Haig. And then Young Sally has been portrayed by Marty Rolfe, Deborah Poplett, which is like the most British name of all time, and then Alex Young. Something that is a recurring theme here this season, Matthew, is the fact that a lot of these Follies numbers are pastiche songs. So there's a reference that Sondheim is using here. So this is a pastiche of a few different things. But first and foremost, the influences that Sondheim credits for this song is Jerome Kern, who Sondheim says is his favorite composer, full stop. Jerome Kern is his favorite composer. Kern did not write lyrics. He only wrote music. But to help understand this inspiration, here is Jerome Kern's A Fine Romance, lyrics by Dorothy Fields, sung by Ella Fitzgerald.
A fine romance with no kisses, a fine romance, my friend, this is. We should be like a couple of hot tomatoes, but you're as cold as yesterday's mashed potatoes. A fine romance, you won't nestle. A fine romance, you won't wrestle.
I might as well. Okay, so that is like the music inspiration that Sondheim is working with. But of course, he would not make it easy on him. He actually has a couple of lyricists that he's trying to emulate here at the same time. So the first is Ira Gershwin, who longtime listeners might remember that Sondheim really does not like very much. But so one is Ira Gershwin. The other is E.Y. Harburg. So those are the two. Let's talk about Gershwin first. This is Let's Take a Walk Around the Block. Lyrics by actually Harburg and Gershwin at the same time. Music is composed by Harold Arlen. Here's a version of that song sung by Doris Day.
Someday we'll go places, new lands and new faces, the day we quit punching the clock. The future looks pleasant, but at present, let's take a walk around the block.
But I said yes, Gershwin is also the other biggest influence here. So here's a good example of that. Nice Work If You Can Get It. Music by George Gershwin, lyrics by Ira Gershwin, sung by Peggy Lee and Frank Sinatra.
Holding hands at midnight, neath a starry sky.
Nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try. Strolling with the one girl, sigh and sigh after sigh. Nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try.
Okay, Matthew, so now that we have all of that under our belts, I don't know if there's anything specific you wanted to say about these references or how much knowledge you have about any of these people that we've just talked about.
I know, like, one of Sondheim's favorite songs to talk about when he's doing interviews is, what is that song even called? You are the promised kiss of springtime that makes the lonely winter seem long. All the Things You Are by Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein. So, like, there's interviews you can find with him talking about how great that song is. And I've got a piano background, and so my teacher had me play some George Gershwin, like, piano preludes and stuff when I was growing up. So I always kind of like Gershwin because I grew up like with a classical training, so, you know, read the notes that are written on the page, don't improvise. But Gershwin straddles that line between what's considered classical and what's considered jazz, because, you know, Rhapsody in Blue is entirely notated. Like, there's no improv in that song or anything like that. So from that sense, I'm familiar with him. I also remember, I don't know if you remember this, a few years back when they did the Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, and Sondheim wrote that letter to the editor, to the New York Times. And I remember he was crapping all over Ira Gershwin. He was like, yeah, so it's funny that you guys call it the Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, considered Ira Gershwin's such a jerk, and DeBose Hayward did all the work there, and da da da.
Yeah, so. I know. Yeah, he does not mince words about Ira. He loves George Gershwin, does not like Ira Gershwin much at all, which is kind of funny. And then, I think E.Y. Harburg also had a hand in Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, he wrote some of the Rainbow, the lyrics for that.
Yeah, yeah. So there's definitely some cultural relevance I have gleaned from it, but that's about as far as my knowledge really goes.
You just triggered a memory. I just remembered I wrote a paper on Yip Harburg, I think, back in college. I took a class on musicals, and my professor was having us dissect whether Wizard of Oz was considered a book musical or a through-conceived musical where, yeah, like, all the major characters get a major song. Like, my professor wrote a book on Oklahoma, and he was a big fan of that, about how that was the first proper book musical. And he tore me apart because I said it was, but he's like, well, no, if it was, then the Wizard should have gotten a song and the Wicked Witch should have gotten a song, but they didn't get songs.
I see.
And in the second half of the movie, it's just a reprise of Follow the Yellow Brick Road for the entire time. There's not really new stuff that's added in the second act at all.
You know, so a little side project I'm working on here while we are self-isolating is I'm attempting to watch every Best Picture winner of all time. Actually, I've already seen like about 50 of them, so it's like there's basically only 40 of them that I haven't seen, so I'm just kind of filling it in. But in the 20s, there's this movie called The Broadway Melody of 1929, and it's this big musical, and then about 45 minutes in, I'm like, I don't get it, because they've only sung the same song 4 different times. This is not a musical whatsoever. It's a song that they have sung 4 times. Anyways, on an 80-year-old movie
that's
at this point.
That's one of my biggest pet That's one of my biggest pet peeves. There's a couple musicals nowadays I can think of that I won't name just in case I have a deal coming soon from someone. But there are a couple musicals where they just like play the same song over and over and over again. And I'm just like, okay, we get it. You're trying to make it a thing.
We get it. All right. Well, let's jump into the song here. So, yes, this is basically right after the Loveland song kind of ends. And we segue into this section here. And all the young versions are out here. And so at first, it's just young Ben and young Phyllis who are singing back and forth. And so young Ben starts by saying, "What will tomorrow bring? The pundits query." And young Phyllis says, "Will it be cheery?" Young Ben, "Will it be sad?" And then they kind of go back and forth here. "Will it be birds in spring or harakiri? Don't worry, dearie. Don't worry, lad. I'll have our future suit your whim. Blue chip preferred. Putting it in a synonym perfects the word. We're in this thing together, aren't you glad? Each day from now will be the best you ever had."
What will tomorrow bring? The pundits query.
Will it be cheery?
Will it be sad? Don't worry, dearie.
Don't worry, lad.
I'll have a future suit your whim. Blue chip preferred.
Putting it in a synonym perfects the word.
We're in this thing together, aren't you glad? Each day from now will be the best day you ever.
So anything that you want to bring up from this introduction to this song?
So I love this song. This is like one of my favorite ones for Follies that is just on my go-to playlist. And I don't know if you have this, but sometimes I'll just have lyrics randomly pop up in my head when I'm like, just, it's like a song that gets stuck in your head, but like just the lyric itself will get stuck in my head. And one of them is, "I'll have our future suit your whim, blue chip preferred." I think that is one of the most incredible lyrics he's ever written. Cause like, so Ben's character, he's like into high society, finance, politics. He's like a successful whatever. In that one little couplet, you've got a future, which literally means the future, but also you can think of it as like a stock future. Suit your whim. So future suture, there's a nice rhyme there, but also a business suit. There's still like that sort of language being used. A blue chip stock, a preferred option. Like within that one little couplet, "I'll have a future suit your whim, blue chip preferred." So I think it's just like really, really good little trick rhymes and but it's still like character related. And then other good character related stuff is like, I like how Phyllis says the words like harakiri and synonym, because like throughout the play, she's talking about how like, "Oh, I'm going to read a bunch of books and become really smart for you one day." And these just feel like words that she's like written down somewhere. She's like, "I'm going to learn these vocabulary words." And
the harakiri one is always catches me off guard a little bit. It's like such a weird thing for someone to reference. Something you called out though, that I really want to give credit to this song, because to put it all out front here, I'm like the opposite of you. I don't really like this song very much, but this is the thing I love about this song, which is these really crafty internal rhymes he's using. And so you've already mentioned one, but then in a synonym, like how it ends there. But like he's using those kind of weird internal rhymes to like really lead into each other. In a way, almost hidden, like you don't even realize it's happening. And then it's like, oh, like when you break it down, it's like it's very obvious, like he's using these internal rhymes to good effect.
It's like so un-Sondheim-y because he makes a point of like not doing these little trick things to draw too much attention to them. But like he's doing this pastiche thing. Actually, I forgot that Follies is also a really fun one because he rhymes my last name in a couplet earlier in the show. He says, this is how Samson was shorn, just as each girl in her smile a Delilah reborn.
It's great.
So he does like fun stuff like that. In my mind, when I was listening to this thing, and again, not knowing the first thing about what the plot was, and I think just like embarrassingly as a musician, I have pretty poor hearing. Like I flub words when I listen to lyrics and things. So like I thought suture was like a surgical suture.
That's hilarious.
And like there are a lot of like little words. I think I wrote a list down actually, because this musical I feel like just has more of those than normally happen when I'm listening to a thing.
Well, but actually that's a good callback, because even from the very first song, the beautiful girl sequence, Sondheim writes about that in his book, how there was a reviewer who blasted him for using a word that he actually doesn't use in it, but it sounds like a different word. It sounds like there's bestial. So it sounds like he's saying that the girls are beasts, but that's not what the actual lyric is. So he says, like, from Follies on, he learned his lesson. It's like he really tries extra hard not to use words that sound like a different thing so that the meaning gets lost.
Right, right. And the other one is, I think in Buddy's eyes, he says, living like a shut-in. But I always hear shot for some reason, living like a shot. And for some reason, I'm getting like, maybe that's an expression, like living as fast as a bullet or something. Right. Like, so I just create my own meanings with the like words that I'm mishearing in this one. But I feel like Follies is the worst one for me out of Sondheim for mishearing lyrics like that. I like the word pundit because it's just like a little old-fashioned. Mm. I mean, nowadays you think of the 24-hour pundits, but again, pundit's a nice Ben word. Feels like a type of word that he would know in his circle.
Yeah, it's definitely like Sondheim is very much leaning into the characters the way that they are. And I think what maybe my distancing is here is that this is Sondheim still writing this, and I understand it's pastiche and everything like that. That's cool. But it does feel so dated, like the way that the rhymes and stuff going on, because it's like they are using language that is not like how they would speak, which is what Sondheim is known for. That's what Sondheim is known for, is that they sing like how they would actually speak.
Don't you love that though? That's like one of my favorite things about
I think that I would appreciate it if that was what the whole show was, but for some reason when it's only the one song that's like that, it's like, oof, this is weird to come out here near the end like this. But I mean, it fits, right? You're going back into the 1940s, they're singing basically in this style of like the late 1930s, what people really loved back then. So it fits. It all fits. It all makes sense for sure.
I was just writing this down, but this is, I think, Sondheim's third wedding song he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
This is all set on the couple's wedding day back in the past. And he also did Not Getting Married Today and lyrics for One Hand, One Heart. I don't know if I'm missing any so far in the catalog or whether he did anything afterwards, but I'm just realizing that Sondheim has a thing for wedding songs.
Bring Me My Bride from Funny Thing Happened on the Way.
Oh, yeah. So, Bring Me My Bride.
Which is sort of a wedding song, like, but not really. But
I think the majority of his shows have wedding songs so far.
So the couples continue on, or the couple continues singing by Young Ben saying, you're going to love tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You're going to be with me. Mm-hmm. You're going to love tomorrow. I'm giving you my personal guarantee. Say toodaloo to sorrow. Mm-hmm. And fare thee well, ennui. Bye-bye. You're going to love tomorrow as long as your tomorrow is spent with me.
You're going to love tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be with me.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to love tomorrow. I'm giving you my personal guarantee.
Say toodaloo to sorrow, and fare thee well, ennui.
Bye-bye.
You're gonna love tomorrow, as long as your tomorrow is spent with me today.
So I want to talk about that very last couplet that young Phyllis sings, because I think this is so integral to her character, and basically her own folly is what this kind of precludes, which is, you're gonna love tomorrow as long as your tomorrow is spent with me. But that has been proven to be not true. So I think that's kind of like the tragedy of what's going on in this happy-go-lucky song.
It's got a nice little double meaning to it, because it, you know, since this is on the wedding, both couples are basically singing like wedding vows, mm-hmm. like I'll have you forever for the rest of my life. Each day from now will be the best day you ever had. Like, meaning today's the beginning of the bright future, but it's also like, well, what was wrong with today? And what was wrong with everything before? Like, why is tomorrow going to be? And it also ties in with, if you just go into the book of what they've been talking about this whole time, like, they're saying things like, oh, I'm going to get you a limo and a chauffeur. And and she just sits around counting the silverware and how much they're very, very materialistic and very material driven.
First off, I agree. The thing that I am struck by is the fact that he was able to get ennui into his like rhyming structure here. Cause it's like, with me, guarantee, ennui, and then back to with me again. So it's a nice little pattern that happens there.
Yeah, and again, I know it's all like a weird writing style, but like personal guarantee is like another business phrase of Ben's, and ennui feels like another vocabulary word that Phyllis is trying to memorize.
I know. Now that you've pointed that out to me, this makes how young Phyllis is singing make a little bit more sense, because it's really weird how she speaks in this song, but I think it is because she's
Ben's
trying
not
to like
really
prove something.
Yeah, she's not the one throwing out, like, Ben's things are all like, okay, look at all this crap I'm going to buy you. Blue chip preferred, personal guarantee. And hers are like harakiri, ennui, just these weird words that no one ever says.
Here's how they finish their section of the song here. So they both come together saying, today was perfectly perfect. You say, well, don't go away. Because if you think you like today, you're going to love tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You stick around and see. Mm-hmm. And if you love tomorrow, then think of how it's going to be. Tomorrow's what you're going to have a lifetime of with me.
Today.
was perfectly perfect, you say. Well, don't go away, 'cause if you think you like today, you're gonna love tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You stick around and see. Mm-hmm. And if you love tomorrow, then think of how it's gonna be. Tomorrow's what you're gonna have a lifetime with me.
Anything that you want to call out about this last section here?
It seems like a very... to get to the recordings, do you have like a favorite among the ones, about, like the British ones versus the American ones?
So by and large, I will say that I prefer original Broadway cast albums for the most part. I will say I have a very deep love for the 2017 National Theatre version. I think they actually did a really great recording of that version. But for this song in particular, yeah, it'd be between those two, I would say. I have pretty negative things to say about the 1987 London version.
Yeah, the same. I feel like something about this just makes it feel very American. Like, today was perfectly perfect, but that's not good
right,
enough.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like, here comes something more. There's actually a recording they did. I saw the young versions of these characters do like a, it looked like a dinner reception thing, but the four actors went up there and sang just in front of microphones, not choreographed and only with a piano, but they did a version of this song. And I don't know, I feel like, it's funny, I don't want to draw too sharp of a thing here, but like, I feel like Americans have trouble doing British things and British people have trouble doing American sure. things. Like, this is such an American capitalistic sort of anxiety that this couple has right here. And that's why I really like that original Broadway cast. And something about the 2018 one, it gets a little bit better later, but the first two couple, they just like kind of over enunciate everything in the section. Mm-hmm. Like, perfectly perfect, you say. Well, don't go away. Like, you can hear every T. Yeah. And I'm just like, okay, thanks, but no thanks. Like,
yeah, eat those T's. You have to eat those. That's the American ways do it.
Like, well, I don't want to be, I mean, I know some people who don't like theater albums because it's overly enunciated, and that stuff doesn't bother me at all or anything like that, but I don't want to hear the diction lesson that you took. Like, I don't want to hear your tutoring.
Yeah, not everything has to be sung like it's Mary Poppins. So, okay, this is where things get a little bit weird. So, talking about that 1987 album, so I apologize for my language I'm about to use here, but this is what I wrote in my notes as I was listening back. I was like, this is topsy-turvy bullshit. Because Cameron McIntosh, who was the producer of the 1987 version and essentially forced Sondheim to write these four additional songs for that version of, and only that version of Follies. He also really, well, he wanted there to be a happy ending to this show. Like, that's basically what it was. Like, he has gone on record of saying, like, Cameron McIntosh did not like Company. He didn't really love the original Follies. He's like, I think it would work if there was a happy ending. So when it came over to London, that's kind of what he was forcing it to happen. So what goes on then is that this song, where the young Phyllis and Ben character and then the young Sally and Buddy character both have their separate songs and then come together to end it off with, they get separated quite a bit in the score. So what we've just read happens right after Loveland. They do another song called All But Underneath. And then they do, I think, yeah, Buddy's Blues, Losing My Mind. And then they come back with the final bit with Sally and Buddy, but then don't do the very end piece where they both come together and sing with each other. So it gets so convoluted and weird. And anyways, I don't think it really works all that well.
I want to see Cameron McIntosh take on Shakespeare. Like, why does this Hamlet have to be such a downer? Why do they have to kill everyone? Why can't they all hold hands?
that's right.
It's just, truth be told, I've only listened to that album like maybe two times, I think, even in preparation for this thing, because I'm like, I can't wrap my mind around this. This is just such a Frankenstein of
an
album.
It's so weird. Like, listen to Country House. Country House is, I think, legitimately a good song, but does not belong
in
Follies, first of all. But
I've heard part of that from, there was a review of called Putting It Together, I think, where it's like, I don't know if you've seen that, it's like five individuals, and they do a review of Sondheim songs, but I think that's in there too. So I've heard part of that song.
So that's just to provide some context. So basically, if you're listening to the 1987 version, what we just talked about, it ends and then it goes to another song. Young Buddy sings, Sally dear, now that we're a man and wife, I will do wonders to make your life soul stirring and free of care. Young Sally says, if we fight, and we might, I'll concede. Furthermore, dear, should your ego need bolstering, I'll do my share. And then they kind of go back and forth. But though I'll try my utmost to see you never frown, and though I'll try to cut most of our expenses down, I some traits I warn you to which you'll have objections, I too have a cornu copia of imperfections.
Sally dear, now that we're man and wife, I will do wonders to make your life so stirring and free of care.
If we fight and we might, I'll concede. Furthermore, dear, should your ego need bolstering, I'll do my share.
But though I'll try my utmost to see you never frown,
and though I'll try to cut most of our expenses down,
I've some traits, I warn you, to which you'll have objections.
I too have a cornu copia of imperfections.
Okay. So, what do you want to call out about this beanie piece with Sally and Buddy?
I like this a lot. I like that the young Buddies always sound a little dorkier than the young Bens. Mm-hmm. Like, they just sound a little bit less sure of themselves. And I also really like the original Broadway cast recording, too, because both the guys sound like such crooners. Like, they just have that real old kind of, it's almost Frank Sinatra-y sort of, like, charm to it. I think we were talking about this before we recorded, but it was, there's a bootleg online of the out-of-town Boston tryouts in 1971, where they rewrite this passage quite a bit. And again, my ear sucks, so I can't really hear what they're saying. But I think instead of Sally, dear, now that we're a man and wife, they say Guinevere, now that we're a man and wife. So I don't know if whoever's listening to this, maybe they can like snoop it out or something, I mean, but figure out if I'm wrong.
A, I don't think that really makes sense. But if I was really stretching for a meaning, Guinevere is with, of course, King Arthur, and they get stolen away by Lancelot. So I they're trying to make a weird analogy that doesn't really fit the show, though.
That's exactly what I was thinking, too. I was like, that could possibly work, but it's it should have been cut out of Boston, and it was. So, and then I'm not going to play it on piano today, but this is where some musical stuff starts getting kind of interesting. The Ben and Phyllis part was all basically stable. The two of them were singing in harmony, and they sounded really nice together. Buddy comes in here singing in the same key that we just finished the last section in. And then as Sally comes in, like she sings one line. She sings, "If we fight and we might, I'll concede. Key change. Furthermore, dear, should your ego need." So like, if we fight, I'll concede. However, key change, we're going to sing it at my key, whether you like it or not. Right.
That's really cool.
So I think that was pretty interesting. And then another cool musical thing is she sings a cornucopia of imperfections. The four steps there, imperfections, span the distance of a tritone. And a tritone in music is the most famous example is the first notes of Maria. Maria, and it's just a really dissonant interval that doesn't sound very good. And the two intervals beneath and above it sound really good, the perfect fourth and the perfect fifth. And so the word imperfections is lying literally in between two perfections, which I think is pretty interesting.
That's cool.
And then this is also where I love whoever is the Alex Young, I think is her name, the young Sally on the London recording, the 2018. Yeah. She has an amazing voice. I love absolutely how she sings Cornucopia. Mm-hmm. Like it's her voice is just like a little laser. Like it's almost inhumanly good, but that's what I really like about it.
Cornucopia.
And then you can find that video online of her just kind of like bobbing along, and she totally gets the sort of cheery campiness of it all.
I mean, and this is really where you hear the lyricist come out, you know, like it's really calling attention to it, because as far as the rhyming structure goes on here, when they're going that into that back and forth, it's like my utmost with cutmost, never frown with expenses down, and then I warn you with a cornu, and then copia comes onto the second line afterwards. So he's rhyming with the first half of the word, and then have objections, imperfections. So yeah, like it all fits together, but like that cornucopia line, like they're very obviously like I'm rhyming and finishing the word.
right. This whole couplet, like contrasting it with the first couple, like the first couple too, they seem much more together. Like they're not really fighting at all, and they're not really pausing to think about what the fights are going to look like. This couple is already thinking about what fighting is going to look like, and that's basically what these two verses are all about. Which is interesting because it's just occurring to me like right now that the first couple has money and this couple doesn't. So like this entire thing is about cutting down expenses and like, well, if you don't have like money and nice material things to kind of hide your follies, for lack of a better word, like then they're going to come out to the forefront and you're going to fight more quickly and more often.
Well, talk about those fights. So this is where they kind of go to. Sally starts off as they go back and forth. I may burn the toast. Oh, well, I may make a rotten host. Do tell. But no matter what goes wrong, love will see us through till something better comes along. I may vex your folks. Okay, I may interrupt your jokes. You may. But if I come on too strong, love will see us through till something better comes along. I may play cards all night and come home at 3. Just leave a light on the porch for me. Well, nobody's perfect. I may trump your ace. Please do. I may clutter up the place. Me too. But the minute we embrace, to love's old sweet song, dear, that will see us through till something better comes along.
I may burn the toast.
Oh, well, I may make a rotten host.
Do tell,
but no matter what goes wrong, love will see us through till something better comes along. I may vex your folks.
Okay, I may interrupt your jokes.
You may, but if I come on too strong, love will see us through till something better comes along. I may play cards all night and come home at 3.
Just leave a light on the porch for me. Well, nobody's perfect. I may trump your ace.
Please do. I may clutter up the place.
Me too.
But the minute we embrace, to love's old sweet song, dear, that'll see us through to something better comes along.
For whatever reason, when I read these lyrics, I get tripped up. It feels like there's something that's not quite on rhythm there for me. But maybe that's part of the issue, is that they're not like in harmonious like synchronization with each other.
There have to be like little pauses in between for when the duet comes in later. Yeah. Like those pauses are filled in by what Ben and Phyllis are singing to. This is like another one of those sections where I get those lyrics kind of stuck in my head. But another lyric that always just plays in my head all the time is, I may play cards all night and come home at 3. Just leave the light on the porch for me. There's just something so quaint about the idea of sitting around playing cards. Maybe it's just like the old fussy man me, but like everyone sits around dicking around on their phones nowadays. I'm just like, wouldn't that be fun just to like go over and play cards sometime? Like how nice is that?
I mean, that line always reminds me of my grandmother, because that's what we often did. Like, we would play cribbage with each other.
Grandmas are real into cribbage.
Oh, so into cribbage. So I know how to play that if you ever want to play cribbage with me. But
we could do it over Skype on our computer.
Exactly. But it's like
just like grandma did.
Like literally drink tea with my like little milk and sugar in it and like playing cards, and it's like trying to make 15s work, and she would destroy me like every time. She had no fear to like beat a 10-year-old boy.
Let's get her let's get her on the phone right now. Let's work this out. It's just, I like those like old timey things, like playing cards, playing cribbage, like just like low tech things. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like this lyric so much. For the first time, like in 3 or 4 weeks, I had a friend actually come into my house and like we had a conversation in person. And he said, this was a nice visit. Like the idea, it's like, oh, let's have a visit. Yeah. I love that idea. I love that.
Do you think this says anything though about the characters themselves? Like we were just mentioning here how they were singing about fighting, but it seems like, they're talking about definitely all the problems that they might have. And I think that all of these essentially come true.
Yeah. So like, again, the refrain for you're going to love tomorrow. Mm-hmm. There's like an implication of like, it's only going to get better from here. But also it's only been shit up until here. Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For this one, it's what's even the refrain? Love will see us through till something better comes along. Yeah. It like kind of implies both a, we may not have much, but we have each other. Love is going to see us through until, our fortunes get better. But also like, love will see us through until I find someone else who I can leave you for, which is what they both want to do.
See, that's the thing.
Well, except for Buddy, who's kind of love him really, like the Buddy Blues sort of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the subtext that I get from this song, honestly, is there's this love will see us through till something better comes along. I mean, the charitable reading of that, of course, like you said, is like, the love is going to sustain us through the hard times, because there's going to be good times on the outset. But it almost feels to me like what they're also saying is like, hey, this is a matter of convenience until we find somebody better so that we don't have to be together with each other anymore.
It's like one of those like optical illusions where you see like the duck or the rabbit. But for me, when I listen to this lyric, I actually have trouble seeing it in the wholesome way. I only read it in the negative way. And that's how it was before I even saw the show. Like, love will see us through till something better comes along. Like, oh, well, what am I, chopped liver? Like, that's always how I've heard that lyric.
Yeah, I think it just depends on your worldview and how cynical you want to be on how you're going to read that line.
Oh, and this also ties back to Buddy's Blues to trump your ace, play cards all night. And then there's a lyric in Buddy's Blues about ideal she avers.
Yeah.
So like, it's a nice unspoken character thing. Well, I mean, I guess it's spoken, but it's not mentioned really in the book, I think, or up until this point. But that Buddy's like a card player. And he's just a good old boy who goes out with the guys.
Right. So the very ending is a very Sondheim way to end this song. I do want to talk very briefly here how we segue into that, because you have, you know, the young Sally Ben Phyllis Buddy character go through like, hi, girls, Ben, Sally, which is exactly the order and exactly the same people who say that back all the way back in Waiting for the Girls Upstairs. So I always think it's like a neat little callback to that song that almost like started off the show or is very near the beginning of the show. Kind of being brought here now with like these simpler times, like, oh, we've seen everything that's transpired in the intervening years. And then they just sing the last refrains of each of their songs over top of one another, and then they end with their big finish.
Girls, Sally, you're gonna love tomorrow's too, and it clutter around the stage, but the minute you love can praise, we're talking about good at song.
So anything specific you want to mention about the ending here?
Before the last part, one final thing I thought about. Again, that 2018 recording. Listen to her saying, on the porch for me. Mm-hmm. Like, just, I could put that on loop and listen to it for an hour.
Sure.
Like the way she sings that word porch, it's so good. So I don't know if you have these written down, but I found a sheet music for the score online. But for that last little patter of tomorrow's what you're going to have, and that is going to what you have. Do you know what all the words are for that?
Oh, God, no.
So they actually wrote out. So Ben and Phil, I'm taking over your role right now.
Yeah.
Ben and Phyllis say, tomorrow's what you're going to have, and Monday's what you're going to have, and April's what you're going to have, and love is what you're going to have a lifetime of with me.
Oh.
And then Buddy and Sally sing, dear, that'll see us through till something. Love will keep us true till something. Love will help us hew to something. Love will have to do till something better comes along.
Yeah, I think that really helps the reading of like of kind of the negativity of the song. You know what I mean? Like they're not all that happy, even though this is a happy song.
Yeah, it's like this, like, you know, we're married now, like it's very shotgun wedding-y, like we have no other choice, like we got to do this now. This is another part where my ear screws up, because like before I looked and saw that it says, and April's what you're gonna have, I always heard it as, and hate is what you're gonna have.
Oh.
So I didn't actually know what they were saying when everyone was kind of singing on top of each other. And then just the way the counterpoint works between the two different versions, you get some cool little overlaps. Like you get like, you're going to love the toast. Young Ben will say, you're going to be with me. Young Sally then says, do tell. Mm. So like the two people who are going to cheat on each other are actually kind of singing their own little separate thing that happens to align with how the rhythms work with the two separate duets, which is kind of cool. So.
So tell me overall, like what is your impression of this song?
Love it. I want more of it. Well, and I think that's what really drew me to this one, because I can't say there's like specific song, like this is the song that made me like a Sondheim freak, but like it's like quintets and quartets, mm-hmm. of like not seeing it being set up and then all the pieces coming together at the very end. Like I love that. So like the quintet from West Side Story, that was a big moment when I had like, oh my God, they're all singing the same thing on top of each other. And then I had it on CD. I'd listen to it like on long road trips. I'd just repeat it over and over again to try to hear each individual part. Like one time I'd listen to Tony's and one part I'd listen to Maria's and one part I'd listen to. And the same thing happens with Kiss Me Ladies and Their Sensitivities, mm-hmm. and Sweeney Todd. So I'd like listen to that. And Your Fault, Last Midnight from Into the Woods. So any song like that is just it's my jam. So I love the song for that very reason.
No, it's so true. Like, I know that some people use it even as sometimes a criticism of having like all these interlocking parts being sung over top of each other. But there's something about it. I mean, especially when you do get the cast album, can really break it down and be like, what are each of these parts actually singing and what are they actually saying? And it still is melodic and it still kind of comes to this very like distinctive ending. I don't know. There's something thrilling about that to listen to.
He talks about that with God That's Good. It's like he hates writing just big chorus numbers where they're all singing the same idea. So like each individual person in the pie shop is like trying to, this one's trying to get out of the way without paying, and this one's trying to get seconds, and this one's trying to, they all have like their own individual motives, and the only thing they come together to sing is God That's Good, because that's literally the only thing they all agree on. Right. But otherwise they're all individuals who have their own things that they want to talk about, which is what makes like the end of Putting It Together in Sunday in the Park so interesting too, when like the critic is saying something and his rival is saying something and his friend is saying something, mm-hmm. and he's singing his monologue. Like that's, I don't know, that's the really rich stuff. Because no, you don't, like when you're watching the play, you don't have to understand every single word that's going on because you get the impression, but then it does like reward someone who goes back and listens to it all the way again from the beginning, like over and over on the CD or whatever.
Now, you have almost basically said already, but do you have a favorite recording of this song, whether from the three that we're looking at this season or a different one?
So actually none of these three were like my go-tos. I think of these three, I like the London one the best because it's, I would say the original Broadway cast.
The 2018 version? The National Theater?
Yeah, I like the 2018 version the best, because I like, particularly Young Sally kind of sells me on it, and that it's like the only non-chopped up version of it that we listen to. But before this, actually, I've got the 1985 New York Times Philharmonic recording on vinyl, which I really like. So whenever I listen to Follies up until this week, it was listening to the 85 recording, which is really nice. And then I don't know if you want to like link this, but something that's really cool to see too is for the Sondheim birthday concert back, I think it was his 80th birthday or something. It was the concert where they did the six women in red dresses. They all came out and sang songs like Elaine Stritch and Bernadette Peters. There's a version where they do this song with, I think it's Matt Kavanaugh, Jen Colella from Come From Away, Bobby Steggert and Laura Osnes, and they all come out and they sing this. But what's really cool about that too is that not only is like the music in counterpoint, but the choreography is in counterpoint too. So like Ben and Phyllis will come out and do their little dance, and they'll kind of be on the left side of the stage and then separate and then go off together. But then when Ben and Sally sing theirs is on the right side of the stage, and they'll come together and then go apart, and the way, and they kind of interweave through each other, and there are like little winks and nods to Sally and Ben partnering up at one point where like they're kind of flirting with each other even while they're dancing with their partners. It's like it's the first time I've seen like choreography that's like in counterpoint in the same way that music would be in counterpoint.
That's cool, though.
Really cool.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Well, Matthew, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come and talk about this. I tend to know the answer, but I'm going to ask this anyways. Is there a way for people?
No.
Yes.
There's not. I appreciate it, though.
No, you're welcome. I mean, is there, how about this? Is there a, not from you necessarily, but what would you recommend people go and like find online, listen to this week? It can be anything. What are you obsessing about?
Okay, I'm much better at that. Okay, so because of you, it's Follies this week. So like, I'd say go listen to that birthday concert. That birthday concert's a lot of fun. Go look at the 2011 Bernadette Peters bootleg before it's taken down. What else am I obsessed with right now? Oh, I think that's about it. Okay,
cool. Thanks, Matthew.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. You can send emails to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. Also, you can follow Sondheim Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And you can support the show on Patreon by going to patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. Thank you to the Alberta Podcast Network, to ATB, and to the Calgary Foundation this week. Putting It Together is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere you get podcasts from. Consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Next week, we'll be talking about Buddy's Blues. I'm very betwixt in between. As always, a big thanks to the great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and to Nick Driscoll for composing our theme music. Well, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now.